The following is a special presentation of the Buccaneers Sports Network. This is the Jay and Keith Show. Two broadcasters, two microphones, and one meticulously scripted podcast.
You what?
Just kidding. Get it, J-K? You get it.
That's what I thought was so funny! It's not funny!
Alongside Keith Brake, here's the voice of the Bucs, Jay Sandoz.
All right, it's Jay and Keith, another episode here of the exciting podcast as we're back in the new year. And going to talk a lot of hoops. It is that.
Can you be back in a new year?
We are back in a new year.
I'm back, right? Back in the new year mood or something.
I've had a pause on the right spot. You know that happens. Do I pause ever?
Back in the New York. Back in the new year groove. It's not new year mood. It's new year groove.
I'm a groover.
It's New York groove.
Groover. I like grooving.
Groove.
No, you're more like Grover than Groover.
Groove. That's true. And Hamburglar.
I was going to say Grimace, but maybe that's just the expression you put on my face every day. Anyway, coming up on the pod, we will talk about ETSU men's basketball, ETSU women's basketball.
Yeah, we will.
And I am maybe starting to feel that dream of spring baseball. I spent a good chunk of my holiday watching something I never thought I would watch in my life until about, 4 months ago. I spent the holidays watching the Border Gavaskar Trophy, which is the big biannual test series between India and Australia in cricket. And they played it in Australia this year, and the Melbourne Cricket Ground Test in Melbourne's 100,000-seat stadium. They had over 370,000 people through the turnstiles over the course of the match, and it was an incredible spectacle. And people just kind of wonder, because nobody really understands it. I explained cricket to Morgan at lunch, and it's big in the Eastern Hemisphere, but it's like college football, right? The meme potential is very strong. The crowds are huge. There's an enormous amount of tradition. There's trophies and rivalries, some of which are iconic, some of which were just made up to appease people's egos, and some of which don't have any meaning whatsoever, kind of like the, what is it, what's the one that is the Land Grant Trophy is one, their $5 bits of broken chair trophy that Minnesota and Nebraska play for. Some of them are kind of like that.
Was there one like the UConn South Florida, where South Florida didn't know there was a trophy?
That's Central Florida.
Come on,
don't shortchange Bob Diaco like that. I know we don't have any more former Diaco staffers here anymore on football, but don't shortchange Diaco like that. He would never have a rival with USF. It'd be UCF, top dog in the American. Conflict. Because you can't spell conflict without FLCT. Florida can. But it's like that, and also the richest and most powerful governing bodies in the sport are trying to kill it for profit. So it's exactly like college football.
Right, so the obvious question I have, as I have no idea what you're talking about, as you probably know.
I gathered.
Is there is that two leagues playing together, or is it literally just India's best and Australia's
national
teams?
It's national teams.
It's national teams.
That's
okay.
It's national teams.
That's all.
So it's India versus Australia. I used to think that five-day sporting events sounded brutal. I could get through a three-day baseball series because it was three discrete games, but I've actually come to really appreciate it. It's like a Zen garden of sports, because during the morning session, it's kind of quiet, crowds still filing in, and it's just the subtle movements of the field. It's very tranquil, and then later in the day, it can get a little bit rowdy and be kind of fun, so I never thought I would enjoy this. I never thought I would enjoy it. But such is the nature of old age. We find things we once thought repugnant to be actually not that bad.
Is that the series where the guy took off his shoe and I thought there was a foreign object and he was doctoring the ball? I thought I saw that on the X.
Bowler. I don't know.
Took off his shoes. Something came out. Somebody zoomed in on it. A little controversy.
could be. Oh. I don't. That might have been.
See, now you almost had me hooked right there.
I think that could have been. But there was like this 19-year-old kid for Australia making his test debut, facing the best bowler in the world, Jasprit Bumrah, in front of 75,000 people. What does he do? He puts the bat face forward between his legs and flips the ball back over his head and scores 4 runs. And just like, I ain't scared of you. And he hit like 60-something in his debut. It was great. Then there was this really emotional first test century for Nitish Kumar Reddy. His dad was in the front row. He was in tears. It was a huge deal. Like, that was awesome. And then Reddy disappeared after that. And then Jasprit Bumrah was awesome until back spasms took him out of the final test and India collapsed like a house of cards.
Well, while you did that, I went to the Hornets game and wore my Larry Johnson jersey.
I'll bet that got some comments.
Oh, I did, especially from younger kids who kept asking their parents, who's Johnson? who is that? Which guy is that? And then there was one parent who was like, I don't know who that is, and I almost wanted to fight somebody.
Oh, no.
But there were at least two or three who were like, oh, my goodness. And I actually passed, there's a mural of Alonzo Mourning, Muggsy Bogues, and Larry Johnson. And it had me walking past it when a kid asked. And I was like, oh, that guy right there he is. They have the, the space between his teeth, whatever, like the Michael Strahan. That's how you describe it to his kid, John Joy. I don't know why Larry Johnson and Michael Strahan got strays right there. Did that. Got to do that.
Well, you got to educate a child on who Larry Johnson was.
Isn't that beautiful?
I love that. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
I got to sit on my butt and eat red meat and watch cricket.
Oh, and Sonny wore her 1994 starter jacket that people still try
to wear. Now that is something.
That was, I'm amazed every time somebody, and she almost didn't wear it. She said, well, the sleeves aren't quite as white. And I'm like, it's the original from when you were like in third grade, 94.
Yes.
So it should be not clean.
It is. How many times has someone tried to buy it off her on site? How many times this time?
Twice this time, which was the least amount. the record was 5. We had 5 offers. A couple of them generally come right as we're walking into the arena.
Wow.
Some folks are like, whoa, where'd you get that? Can I get it? You know what? You know, throwback. You can't buy that anymore. So
right.
Try to get that, but that's what we did. And watched a lot of college football. Played family golf one day.
Golf!
Are you ready for some golf?
As the athlete that I am, Keith, I rolled my ankle after the 4th hole coming off the green, and I just drove the cart.
This is fun. We're having fun.
Yeah, it sounds like you had a great time playing family golf. Where did you even go to play golf in December?
I had a country club. It was New Year's Eve. It was not bad weather.
Oh.
It was like 49, 50 degrees, give or take, sunshine, in the afternoon.
I lived up north too long. I can't imagine playing golf in December. Even with a pink ball, I couldn't do it.
We did have a couple of those. We did have a couple of pink balls.
Yeah. Well, you need them because you just lose them constantly. You need high-vis all the time.
I have those glasses that they're blue, and they take all the green out of this band. Colorblind helps take them out so I can see the ball better. Not in the fairway, of course, wherever my ball is.
I was going to say, you're going to see it on the tee better?
No, I don't need any help on the tee. It's everywhere else that I stink.
Noted. You want to talk about basketball? We've done this. This is 8.5 minutes. This is a...
No, people want to know what we do.
People want to know what we do? Want to know what we
That's
do?
What we do. I do want to talk. Where do you want to start? You want to start?
Start with Wofford.
All right, start with the Wofford Terry. Well, we can backtrack for a half second to see a couple things on VMI first.
Well, yeah, the record-setting performance against VMI.
I was going to say we could do that. The 17 threes VMI, of course, John Bucks, the 3rd Buccaneer to have 10 or more threes in a game. Him, Courtney Pegram with 10, Pat Good, obviously, with 11. And then the 3rd ever triple-double, 18 points.
Seymour and Pegram. Funny how he's on both lists, and Tim Smith.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't think he is.
Yeah.
And Kevin Brown was mad, and I give him credit. Seymour had a 3 late that rattled and didn't go. If that would have went, all 3 triple-doubles would have been for 21, 10, and 10.
Wow. Well, Seymour did get hit. He got his triple-double on the last shot of the game with a defensive rebound.
He
didn't need the assist. He needed the rebound.
I got Kevin Brown fired up because I questioned that. He went and pulled up the video to prove to me that he actually did, and he does, grab the rebound before the red light goes off.
Yeah. And he just chucked from the corner. almost could have. See, I was more worried that Kevin would have adjudicated that as a lob pass instead of a shot.
Well, it was the VMI shot.
Yes. So, it was a defensive rebound for Seymour.
So yeah. You didn't want to give him the steal, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but it would have been a steal potentially instead of a defensive rebound. Yeah. At which point I would have lost my mind.
Flames on the side of my face.
Because the man earned his triple double. Give him his triple double.
Yeah. So that's VMI. Three things there. I think we have to talk about. Bucks roll. They take, and then Wofford comes in Saturday, and they had been struggling. And the one guy that had really been struggling was Sybils. They put him.
He and Bailey just surged in the second half. They scored 20 points in the first 4 minutes and 14 seconds of the second half.
And it was 9 for 9 to start second half, but they ended the first half with three makes in a row. So they had 12.
They hit 12 straight shots.
Which is hard. I mean, at one point, I looked down and they were like 10 for 11, 91% or something on the road. Which is just incredible.
Dylan Bailey didn't miss until like 9 minutes to go in the game. He didn't miss a field goal.
I mean, again, if you look at certain things in a vacuum, I mean, the Bucks shot 54% from the floor, 43% when nine makes from three. You're thinking, well, at home, that's probably going to win.
13 turnovers is decent. It's not a ton.
I mean, almost
double-digit steals, too.
Almost 70% from the free throw line, which is great for them because they're one of the bottom in America.
But it would have been higher if Peterson hadn't been 6 of 11.
Yes. And that was, again, timely misses, too, because he had three in a row late, under 2 minutes, that were just kind of killers. And that gave Sisk.
Sisk either was 0 for 2 or 1 for 2 on a key trip.
He was 1 for 2, but I don't think he missed a free throw last year, and I didn't take that many. And he hadn't missed this year, so it was his first collegiate miss. Again, untimely.
Oh, man.
There were also a couple other untimelies. It was a steal where Strother slipped and fell.
It was called for travel. Yep.
The travel.
Stinks.
Then you have a 6-foot shot. Seymour, after the review, gives the ball back to the Bucks, and that doesn't go. And then the big one, I think, more than all of the things we've talked about, was there were six offensive rebounds, but three at the most unopportune, crucial moments. And about every offensive rebound was passed. I think six of the eight offensive rebounds they have, they scored on, they being Wofford. At one point, they had six offensive rebounds and 11 points.
Are free throws scored as second chance points?
That's a Kevin question, but I believe they are. Off an offensive rebound.
So that would stack a couple, because they had a couple of second chance opportunities where they got fouled shooting.
Well, and I know that answer because they were 6 rebounds, 11, and the 7th rebound they didn't score. The 8th was at the end with 1.2, and they hit 1 of 2, and they have 12. So, yes, it would be.
Okay.
So I can answer that question.
Yeah. And I think also the fact that ETSU didn't really have much of an answer for Kyler Filovich early. Filovich ended up with, what, 14, 16 points?
Yeah, he was scoreless in one of the games last year.
He had 25 points and 10 rebounds in 4 games against ETSU coming in.
Yeah, 16-8.
So
was 2 of 9. And again, he's a 41% free throw shooter who does try to bank it on purpose. I was given the heads up, like, hey, he's not. He is bad, but he is trying to bank it. So if you see it banked in or hits the backboard, that is what he's trying to do.
Okay.
From what I was,
we didn't know that. We were just taken a little bit aback by that.
Which is funny because I've talked to Bruce about, should we just tell DJ Hughes, like, that's been the talk of what should Hughes do.
Bruce wanted Filovich to shoot underhand, like Rick Barry.
I can see that.
But Wofford came in here and they had a player that gave ETSU some problems. And Roosevelt Wheeler got at him a little bit early, was very active with the hands, back tapped the ball a few times. But Filovich eventually settled in. I thought Wofford spaced the floor really well on offense. They stressed ETSU's defense in a lot of ways that were able to get them some open looks and then knocked those open looks down in a way that they hadn't done a whole lot this season thus far. Wofford shot, what was their percentage from three? It was in the high 40s, right?
45.
45?
9 of 20.
And it felt, going to be more out of that second in that second half run.
It was 7 of 11 in the second half alone.
Yeah, so it did feel like more. So because it was a lot in the second half. So they hit big shots in big spots, and they executed in a way that stressed ETSU's defense. And I think ETSU had some things that we thought might be issues for this team that reared their head in a game that ETSU still had, despite those question marks, despite those concerns, still had a chance to win it in the final moments. Jaden Seymour gets a decent look from, 6-8 feet and spins it out of the left side inside of the rim. Man, you had it. You still had that chance. It was a good look. Seymour rose over the top. He wasn't contested. There wasn't any contact. And he just missed it. Sometimes that happens.
Not only not contact, the great pump fake that got Silva's actually to jump out of the way. And then, you know, one of those things where you're not close enough to dunk it or anything like that, because he was, again, about 6 feet away. But you kind of, do you bank it, do you soft it, do whatever. And, again, I think he was caught off guard that he was probably that wide open. I don't know how that plays into things. I do like the design of the play because they ran Peterson inbounded. They ran, I think it was Bugs through, and it kind of drew the attention. People go to him in the corner and then lobbed it in the middle where nobody was there but Seymour and his man.
Yeah, I think the instinct is to ride the highs and the lows equally, but I don't see this as any sort of rock bottom thing. I think the fact that ETSU had a chance to win this game, win their stars, let's be honest, kind of misfired a little bit, right? If you ask me, how many free throws did Kimari Peterson need to miss 5 in a game? I would have said 20 or 25. Well, he was 6 of 11, and you lose a game by 3 points. And Jaden Seymour had a chance to give you the lead with 6 seconds left. I would have said he makes that shot, and ETSU takes the lead, and ETSU plays good defense, and they win. And neither of those things happened. So I think in a game where their stars did not align to the level needed to overcome some early second half defensive struggles, transition defense, those sorts of things, they were still in it. They still had a chance to win. They just didn't get that one play that would have made the difference. And then we're talking about this game a lot differently. But I think this to me, in a way, is like the North Dakota State football game. It was a great basketball game. It was entertaining. Both teams made a ton of electric plays. One team had to lose it. It was ETSU, and that stings. But I'm ready to load up and head down to Macon and go get after the Mercer Bears.
It was off to a nice little start. Home win in overtime against Chattanooga. Had to survive. Matter of fact, both games, they were up 7 against Chatt with about a minute and a half to go. Chatt did a great job to come back, get it to overtime. And then Mercer was up like 17 at VMI in the second half. VMI actually took the lead, and Mercer was able to come back. So Mercer clearly, under Ron Riddle in his first season, he's won a lot of games at Daytona State, Bethune-Cookman, UT Martin, now starting to show that he can win games, at Mercer. But they got some pieces that can score the basketball. Their big thing was kind of like Wofford. Wofford had blown 4 games in the second half of double digits. I've seen Mercer jump out to these leads and have trouble hanging on to it. So if the Bucks are just patient, if Mercer does get out to a quick start, certainly it looks like Mercer has a tendency to kind of come back down a little bit. But a couple of things got to change. You know, the Bucks have been playing really good at home. Still shot the ball well. That didn't change. It was one of the few times. That was, their 7th home game. And I think that was the first time they allowed an opponent over 45% shooting.
It was their 9th home game.
So that was the first time they allowed somebody over 45% shooting. I think High Point did shoot over that, but that was an exhibition.
That was an exhibition. That didn't count.
So, again, I think at home, what hurts is, you old adage, win all you can at home, and you can go 500 on the road, you got a great shot of competing for a championship. And Bucks drop one. It just means they get a play at Wofford at some point. Can they repay the favor at the Terriers. That being said, they got a great chance Wednesday, Mercer, and then Saturday home against the Citadel, because you're going to turn around the next week and have two, you know, huge road tests at Furman and Sanford. But you can't look that far ahead. Right now, the Bucks just got to focus on heading down to Macon and trying to pick up their first road. So kind of winning.
The only person who can look that far ahead is you, building your Sharks.
Yes, you got to stay ahead. You don't know. You don't know what happens around here when you get caught in the.
No, man. No, I do. I do. Believe me, I do. Women's basketball starts SoCon play on Thursday against UNCG. Their final tune-up was the fourth largest margin of victory and sixth most points in a game in ETSU history as they routed Tusculum, put 103 on the Pioneers, and won that game by, was it 48?
Yeah, 103-55.
103-55, so quite a performance. And the second most made field goals in a game as well.
And without Milton, right? And
without Braylon Milton, their leading scorer.
I mean, if you would have said, hey, you're going to score 103, and then, you know, well, how much Milton score? Well, none. I think, you know, that's kind of open. The first time since 2011 Mercer that ETSU had broke 100 on the women's side.
And it was good to see Brecken Southerly. She posted a career-high 19 against Tusculum. And finally, I think, has built a little bit of confidence and forward momentum offensively. You know, she had that ankle injury early in the year. Looked a lot nastier than that, than it was against Jackson State. I wondered if it had been like a knee or if something was broken, if there was a ligament that was damaged, something that was going to, you know, cost her her sophomore year. And thankfully that was not the case. But she hadn't really been in a rhythm. I felt like she had a good sense of when to break up the floor, being a good receiver for the other guards, passing the ball up the floor in transition, being able to take it to the basket, using that slashing ability that I think is the probably the best asset in her offensive array, is her dribble drive and her ability to streak to the rim and then bounce. She's a pretty good athlete. And she had a chance to really let that rip last Thursday against Tusculum. And that was good to see. Courtney Moore looks good. Courtney Moore looks as good as I have ever seen her playing at ETSU in now my third year here and her fifth. This is the Courtney Moore that we were hoping for last year, that is ready, has stepped up, and is a major contributor. And Kendall Foley, back-to-back double figures games for the first time since the start of the year. That was also really nice to see. So some good things for ETSU. They are optimistic that Milton will be back soon, whether it's Thursday. If it's not Thursday, it's probably not Saturday in Cullowhee, but maybe next Thursday, as the SoCon schedule is a little more condensed for the women. If you're not ready to go on Thursday, probably not going to be ready to go on Saturday. But, you know, for the men, like if it's Wednesday, Saturday, that schedule offers opportunities to get somebody back on the floor. I think ETSU will probably be cautious with Milton just because she is such a valuable player to them, and she is somebody that needs to be completely behind her. It was an ankle. Needs to have it completely behind her and fresh and focused and ready to hit shots, because she is this team's best offensive player and leading scorer for a reason. And she makes the other players around her, I think, better. I think she's unlocked something with Courtney Moore in particular. Those two just seem to play well off of each other. They're similar types of players in that they're both really good on the shot. I think both of them can pull up on the bounce, but they thrive on the catch and shoot. They can both drive to the rim. Braylon's a little bit longer than Courtney wingspan-wise, so she's got a better chance to maybe get those scoop shots and finger roll layups. But overall, those two players have really helped ETSU rise, and I think the five is still developing. You know, Megan Downing, the rim protection's there, the rebounding's there. At some point, the shots are going to start falling again for her. And Bella Hunt is just same player every day, just bull in a china shop, physical, brings an edge. I think coming here and playing off the bench is a little bit of a surprise, in the sense that she was a starter and a decorated one on two NCAA tournament teams at the Mount. But at the same time, I think that lets her go in there and give it everything she's got for 20 minutes instead of having to hold down the fort for 30. So I like the way this team's set up. Some pieces are thriving. Some pieces are still growing into roles. But I do think this team's got the opportunity to go get something.
Paige Lyons, I thought, off the bounce was incredible.
Oh, man.
And the speed,
you want to talk
about just
bouncy. Yeah. Like Lyons able to get with the ball fake that she got three or four people to bite on. Just felt like that was – it didn't even feel like it was a conscious thing. Right, almost felt like a natural extension of her shot motion to ball fake and then go up with it. But, yeah, that's exactly what they wanted her to do. They wanted her to be the twitchy athletic guard that gets in the passing lanes and gets down the floor and scores runouts, and she did that.
Missed a couple bunnies but made some incredible layups.
Had to recalibrate.
But I was just – and the showing the ball, too, that's an extra way to protect it. Some of it, yeah, a little showmanship, you could say. I think it's a little more protecting, a little more like that's her game, kind of like Keith said, kind of all in one motion.
Yeah.
Kind of felt it was that. Also, four turnovers. I can't think of any other time that I've been doing that there have been a four turnover game. I don't
think the record book has fewest turnovers in a game in it, but
no,
that might be the record.
Might send Grayson on the revenant. I'm just the four turnovers.
I've already got him hunting career blocks because Megan Downing is going to close in on 100 by the end of the year.
Well, we've got to give him something to do. He's the new guy. If we don't give new guys something to do,
is that why I didn't have anything to do my first week? Is because I wasn't technically the new guy? Because I had been here before?
Probably. Or I was just false insecurity that you weren't going to do anything and then hammer you the next week. That's probably what I did.
Sure, guy.
Took it easy on you for a minute or two. So the women, they're going to go on the road, right? Open up at UNCG, at Western Carolina.
Yes.
The full women's slate doesn't start until Thursday. As Keith said, not just condensed schedule as far as Thursday, Saturday, but they play four less games. And so all those meaningful games coming into play.
Which is something that Mock and I think want to sit down and have a conversation about on the record somewhere. Because Mock's got opinions on that. I've got opinions on that. And you have opinions on that, too. We've all talked about it. Talk about it until we're blue in the face. That
yes, we can have opinions that we want to. But
this is the tie with the MEAC for the smallest women's basketball championship in Division I. I mean, that's
they also have eight. I'm assuming everybody else has nine or more.
I believe everybody else has nine. Right now, the WAC will eventually get down to like seven, but right now it's in, I believe, nine or ten. So we're the smallest one in the country, co-smallest one. Because we're the only league that has multiple schools that don't sponsor women's basketball. And the sport struggles because of that. So you end up playing a lot more of these games, which, you know, Mock is kind of like, yeah, I understand why we're doing this. I don't love it. I would rather play another Division I school.
Yeah, so a lot of people ask me that. Why do we keep playing these in January? I'm like, because every other league is playing.
Yeah.
There is no non-conference D1s because everyone is playing at this point. You can only get D2 games unless you want to go 2.5 weeks, basically, in between games. Which they play one game between the 21st and December 21st and January 9th.
Which is when the UNCG game is.
Right. So if you didn't play that January 2nd game, I mean, you're talking, what's that, 20 days, give or take?
Yeah.
That's a long time. For sports, and especially at this level where repetition and normalcy and, you know,
you can flip that around and say it may not necessarily be a bad thing. I mean, think about the German Bundesliga in soccer. They take 2.5 weeks off in the middle of the season. Just stop the season. Like, okay, everybody go home for the holidays. We're not gonna play on the traditional winter holidays. We're not going to play the new year. We're going to come back early January, and we're going to start the season back. They have it. Now, that is for a practical reason because it's an outdoor sport and the winters there can get pretty brutal, especially in the northern part of the country. But I don't know that it's necessarily a bad idea to take a look at that. I think all options should be examined with the basketball calendar. I think it's a little bit wacky, but if nothing is going to change from the outside, then I think we as a conference need to huddle up and ask – reps that Kennedy Youngkin hopefully do not have to come in handy yet. The fact that Youngkin hasn't played a ton is an indicator that the plan for her development is working. She's being brought along very slowly. You know, Kaylee Carson got some valuable experience. Hopefully, those players won't have to use that experience all that much down the stretch. It's nice to have it. You hope you don't need it. But at the same time, would you rather be playing conference games at this point? Would you rather be getting ready for conference play at this point when everybody else is? I think the answer, from my perspective, from my money, is yes. And I think a lot of the coaches around the league would tell you the same thing, is we would love to have even just one more team in the SoCon for women's basketball, baseball, for softball. But women's basketball, I thought, looked like they needed to get the rust off from the holidays, get themselves up to flying speed, and then they're going to go face a UNCG team that has an outstanding player at the top in Jade Gamble. Felice Kane can be a handful in the post, not the most prolific scorer, but protects the rim pretty well, and a good defensive rebounder, good offensive rebounder as well. She should be at 6'3". But it's a tough place to go play. They're going to Fleming. They're not going to the Coliseum. This is a difficult road environment. It is not a place that Mock has won yet as a coach. So, or as a coach at ETSU, I should say. She's 0-2 there. So this is going to be a tough one. And if they come out of there with a win, I think you feel pretty good going into a Western Carolina team that can score now and looks like they're having fun, which is more than could be said last year. So Jonathan Sippis is rebuilding the culture in Cullowhee, first and foremost. Still not that great of a defensive team, though. But they can score in bunches, and they can run, and they can cause you problems. But you feel a lot more confident going to Cullowhee if you're able to get a win in Greensboro.
Yeah, amazing how that goes, especially, again, a little bit of a quicker turnaround where the men generally don't stay, unless you're VMI, and they'll have a couple of trips just because they're in Sanford, will because they're so far away from certain teams. They try to piggyback those games just to play Thursday, Saturday, like an example. BMI is going to play Thursday at Sanford and Saturday at Chattanooga.
Which one do you like better? Do you like the Wednesday, Saturday, or the Thursday, Saturday?
Wednesday, Saturday.
Yeah.
I get better because you're there, you play a game, you need to come back, you're not on the road. Being on the road 3 or 4 days, I mean, again, there's a lot of things. You know, I think it's easier on the budget as well. Day in between and all that. I think we tried to do the math one time. But I like that. And an extra day of rest, extra day of things. I feel like when it was the travel partner, you know, ETSU and Chapman was a travel partner, or was ETSU Western? I can't remember. I think they flipped it up. And it was ETSU Chat because they had Mercer Sanford as a travel partner. And then Wofford Furman, that's back when Wofford was rocking and rolling. And then not all those double games are equal.
Right.
So if you go, you know, and play Wofford Furman on the same week or ETSU Chat, that was very different than if you got to play Mercer and Sanford back then, which wasn't a team, or Citadel, UNCG, whoever it was. So I think it allows, instead of a disadvantage to play, depending on where you were at in the legs, to play two games in a row that were tough, now you get a little more there. So I like it better Wednesday, Saturday. I think, Wednesday's a little tougher night sometimes for fans to make it, but I like Wednesday, Saturday.
I'm kind of agnostic on it, so strong.
I mean, I wasn't that. I thought Saturday, Monday, several years ago wasn't bad. You leave on a Friday, you know, Monday you come back Tuesday. That was the original SoCon before the Bucks left to go to the ASUN. It was a Saturday, Monday league, and so that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, when you're in conference play, you're not competing.
Well, but, you know, just and lost class, if you want to look at it that way.
Sure.
You leave on a Friday afternoon, which everyone's already done with class. You miss Monday only as opposed to leaving Wednesday at lunch.
Right.
You could lose Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Nowadays, though, with online and other things, I don't know. And no one seems to be concerned about academics as much anymore, so I don't know how much people cares. Certainly.
You know who would be good to have on this show? Eric Baumgartner.
Yep, he would like it.
I think he'd enjoy that. He talks well. He talks better than either of us.
He knows more than we do, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think
yeah, we can get him.
ETSU baseball coming up. The preseason polls haven't been released yet, but the schedule is out. Looks like a pretty good home slate. Should be exciting. I am excited. I've been cutting out headshots for television.
Well, this is the first time I'm going to see this game. So.
First time you're going to see
it? Technically, Coach Panucci gave me like a tentative schedule in like September.
It hasn't changed much.
Okay, so I say that in a little jest. I did actually see it in the fall, not since it's been released. And I knew we didn't think they had it.
So, notable series March 7th through the 9th, which is the weekend of the SoCon tournament. ETSU baseball hosts the Pitt Panthers. 7th, 8th, 9th, 3-2-1 p.m. series at the Tom. Longwood the following weekend, and then Samford. They open SoCon play March 21st through the 23rd. Notable home game as well on April 15th, Virginia Tech. That's a Tuesday, 5 o'clock first pitch at Thomas Stadium, which will also be an active construction site. New facility in right field. They have got all of the, they're getting all of the offices and things set up. The site's being prepared, and I believe they're going to start construction on that. I think they kind of already started casually kicking some dirt around, but they're going to really start going on it next spring or in the spring. And I think they're hoping to have it. The exterior structure will be done around May, and then the whole thing will be furnished out by July. I thought was the timeline I heard last. But yeah, you will as you go to games, you will see that facility start going up. It'll be pretty cool. I think this team is going to be good. I think they have the potential to win more games. I don't know if they'll necessarily score as many runs, but I still think they can win 35-ish games because they have the best pitching staff in the SoCon going in. Honestly, independent of whoever else comes out of the mix to be a starter, like a midweek guy or what have you, you have Michael Harpster, Carter Fink, Chase Hyde as your starting rotation. And those three guys are outstanding. They were really good last year. There is no reason to think that they won't get even better in 2025. Fink, it's his senior year. I think Carter Fink really wants another crack at Mercer because that first game, Friday night, he comes out, he gets the ball, and he had a little bit of jitters, right? Because he was from Macon, and they didn't recruit him. He went to junior college, and now he's at ETSU. I think when he's got that April 17th game, which is a Thursday, actually. He's got that April 17th game at the Homer Dome Circle. So this should be a fun year. I think you're going to see some good pitching. The bullpen has got a lot of major contributors back. Andrew Ronnie's back. Derek McCarley, I think, is going to have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. He had a disappointing year last year and looking to reclaim a bullpen role, high leverage role. Out of the pen. Kenny Keller's back, and he was solid. Vetterman, Anger, I think they've got some really good players that are in that bullpen that are going to be problems for the other team. Batting is going to be interesting. Obviously, Jamie Palmese can play center field, and Cody Miller will play either third or short. And from there, J.D. Yakubinis might catch. We'll see if Blake Jacklin plays in the outfield. I would imagine yes, and probably in right field. We'll have to see how it all shakes out by the end of it. But I do think this team will have a winning combination of arms out of the bullpen that will get their offense some time to get rolling. It may be a little bit early in there, but listen, after everything I've seen Chad Marshall do the last 2 years, that guy, the hitting coach for ETSU baseball, I just trust him implicitly. I don't go bug him because I know he's going to figure it out. I think he is a wizard.
Well, they're going to have to try to figure it out pretty quick because Northern Kentucky's pretty good and won 35 games again last year.
Yes, and they played Miami in Miami last year at the end of the season.
And
they get them back here for their
And I love the Binghamton, Siena kind of 3-day. Everyone gets several games in a row. Binghamton, Siena is going to play. Then ETSU will play Siena. Then the next day, ETSU will play Siena. Then Binghamton. Then ETSU will play Binghamton. Then Siena, Binghamton play again. You get as many games as you can. If you love baseball, on February 28th, because nothing says baseball like Valentine's Day weekend, which is actually the Bucks open on Valentine's Day on Friday, as they open. That's the traditional weekend.
College baseball needs to claim Valentine's Day. You know, the NBA has Christmas Day, and the NFL has Thanksgiving. What about college baseball on Valentine's Day? Show the one you love that you love them by freezing your feet off, standing on a block of styrofoam that you had the good sense to bring with you to the stadium. Or you can do what they do in Minnesota and play at US Bank.
Oh, yeah. And they play 24 hours.
Yes, they do. Yeah. They are around the clock on some of those games. So you'll get like D3 teams that are coming in, junior college teams come in and play in there. It's great. That is one of the coolest things I've ever seen, is just round the clock baseball. Some of these games are on a timer. It's like, hey, we got to get a move on. That was really cool to watch. But yeah, don't have the luxury of a baseball caliber gnome, so make do with the outside. Yeah, bring good thick socks and gloves to those early season games. But maybe date night, you know, hot dog and something to drink and cold weather and baseball.
Love baseball. Also,
you love baseball, but do you love the other things?
The cold baseball. I don't love cold baseball.
Love
baseball.
Does your wife love you enough to go to a Valentine's Day baseball game?
No, and I think I'll actually be on the road. Men's basketball plays Chattanooga the next day. I think I'll be down in Chatt. What do you think I'd rather be watching? ETSU men's baseball or being anywhere near Chatt?
Chattanooga does have a nice aquarium, but
I do like the aquarium. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Yeah.
I like the aquarium in Chattanooga. Big Virginia Tech, April 15th.